Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. Along with me is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week other than being very hot?
Yeah, other than the heat wave that's come through, doing very well. We are in July, which means we are just weeks away from Big Ten Media Days, and then that's the first official start of Big Ten football season. So, or unofficial start, I guess you could say. So there's a lot happening in the next couple weeks.
It's always a case, you know, you flip the calendar to July, and I don't know what happened to June. It seemed like yesterday it was May. But you flip the calendar, and all of a sudden you look and say, oh, we're getting there. That football season is creeping up on us, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. We get to this point every year where it seems like, you know, maybe May goes by slow, and then June flips by, July flips by, and before you know it, we're getting ready for the first kickoff of the year.
And I'll tell you what, if you're a Penn State football fan, this coming season with the – we don't change coaches here all that often, okay?
Right.
And we really don't fire coaches in the middle of the season that often, if ever. So the change – and it's not just a change in coaching staff – but such a changeover in personnel, in players, that it's like, I don't think anyone here knows what to expect, Dustin. As an outsider looking in, as you see this, what is your takeaway? When you look at this, what is your expectation level for Penn State football?
Yeah, it's really hard because it feels like, you know, when in the old days, and by the old days, I mean like as recent as 8 years ago, maybe, you know, maybe even more recent than that, you would have an expectation that a coach would come in and maybe year one wouldn't look great. Maybe year two is when they start to show some improvement. And then year three, you find out if your coach is maybe a contender or not. Now, there's some outliers there. It took Jim Harbaugh, obviously, a little while to get back and figure out his cheating scandal before he was able to make a splash. But it also feels like, you know, with guys like Kurt Cignetti coming in, having immediate success, you know, Steve Sarkisian relatively early had success at Texas. It just feels like the expectations are always, we need to win 9 or 10 games. We need to be in contention for the college football playoff. And I think Penn State, because of their schedule, has that ability, but I don't know if, you know, we'll see how the talent fits, what the coaching style is like. I think I'm just as curious as everybody else. I don't really know what to expect and what would be considered a success or what would be considered a failure. I think there needs to be probably a little bit of leeway and grace given, but you know, Jim, when they lose that first football game, everybody's going to want somebody else running the show and wrong hire, you know, all this other stuff. So, and it's going to be interesting, but I think the expectation level, especially the place like Penn State, has certainly changed. Now, when, you know, speaking from experience of somebody who recently covered a team that made a coaching change, you know, Barry Odom, when he came in, there was no really expectation for him to have that sort of success. It was, can you get to 4 wins? Obviously he fell short of that, but even in year 2, it's like, can you be, you know, maybe get to 5 or 6 wins and be a little bit more competitive in some of those high end games. So it depends on school, but for Penn State, I think because of the level of success Matt Campbell had at Iowa State, because of Penn State's schedule, because they have I think maybe one of the biggest reasons too, Jim, is because Rocco Becht is a veteran quarterback. There's going to be, I don't want to say it's college football playoff or bust. I think that's a little too high, but I think Penn State fans are looking for probably a 9-win season in year 1, which is, it's not going to be easy to do, but it's possible.
You know, Dustin, here's one of the things that I really appreciate about you is I ask you a specific question about Penn State football, and you're able to weave in a Jim Harbaugh shot. So I appreciate that. And as I'm sure many of our listeners do also. And it's interesting. I think Kurt Cignetti, this is another way he has ruined it for coaches. Mm-hmm. He took this god-awful Indiana team and program, and in year one gets them into the playoffs, and in year two wins a national championship, which is just crazy. But it also creates this, is there a model for success for a new coach? Is there, you know, the couple things off the top of my head that I think of is, first of all, and you alluded to it with Rocco Beck, Matt Campbell didn't just bring in Rocco Beck. He brought in 23 Iowa State players. And they weren't just, hey, you know, 23 random players. It was, now there's a handful of young players there that are, you know, not going to be a factor for a couple years. But a good number of them, the quarterback Rocco Beck, the running back Carson Henson, two tight ends, two wide receivers. You know, this is, oh, and by the way, an offensive lineman who will play left guard. That's one, two, three, four, five. That's like six starters on offense. And maybe not quite as many, but close to that many starters he also brought from the defense. So that's one tendency. We saw that with Kurt Cignetti with the James Madison team. And with the transfer portal, you could bring not just players from your own team, but other players. You could bring in veteran players. That seems to be the model, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you can get that mixture of talent and experience, then that's exactly what you want. Again, Cignetti, and this has probably been overused by me, but he used the basically the pitch of we take production over potential. And I don't care if this guy is rated, you know, number 150 in the transfer portal. If he's, you know, caught 100 passes for 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns, I'm going to take him over the guy who's a, you know, the number 4 guy in the portal, but he was, you know, second or third string at Texas because he was behind a lot of good wide receivers. So I think there's value in that. I think he's kind of changed the game. Now you still have to have a really good evaluation process. And so, yeah, you want the combination of talent and production, but if you can get a few of those guys, I think to me, I think a lot of people look at the quarterback situation and say you need to have experience there, and certainly that's important. But I think the offensive line is maybe more important than any other group on the field. If you have a really good, experienced, talented offensive line, then you put yourself in a really good position to win a lot of football games. I mean, that's the old adage, the old cliche is games are won and lost in the trenches. So, you know, I think that if you're able to add some pieces and add depth and add experience on the offensive line, that's as good as any position on the field. I mean, yeah, if you can get if you feel good about a Fernando Mendoza or a Rocco Beck or who, I mean, Rocco's a little bit of a different situation, right? Because he, you know, Matt Campbell knows he's not taking a risk. He knows what he has in Rocco Beck. But if you can get a talented quarterback to go along with those other pieces, then you're going to put yourself in really good position. And that's, I think that's also why the expectations are probably a little bit higher for Matt Campbell. Like, he brought players from a really solid Iowa State team to Penn State. So there's going to be at least a little bit of team chemistry, a little bit of understanding of what the offense is going to look like, what the defense is going to look like. So just putting himself in a really good spot.
Well, definitely with the offense, you know, all of the skill position players, quarterback, one of the three running backs that'll be a factor, two of the three tight ends, two of the three or four wide receivers are all coming in from Iowa State. Now, defensively, they're getting a new defensive coordinator and the coaching staff a little bit different there. But so that might take a little bit longer to put it together, because the coordinator on defense doesn't know the Iowa State players, doesn't know the Penn State players. So that's going to be, you know, some changes there. The other factor, and you alluded to it, was the schedule that Penn State has. That's a huge factor, okay? And sometimes, you know, schedules can be overplayed because you don't know, you know, 2 years ago, you had Indiana on your schedule, and you thought, oh, well, you know, there's a win. Well, right. You know, we all learned that. But when you avoid this year's Indiana, Oregon, Ohio State, you know, that's a very helpful schedule. And as I've told people, you mentioned, you know, getting to 9 wins. I think there's no doubt they're going to be favored in 9 games. And the 3 games that Michigan on the road, I believe they'll be an underdog. Washington on the road and USC at home are the 2 games that, again, depending on how good those teams are. But, you know, those are USC going cross country and playing at Beaver Stadium on what will probably be a whiteout game. I wouldn't be surprised if Penn State's favored in that one also.
I think they will be. And because not only like USC, the only you talk about my knack for slipping in Jim Harbaugh, but I slip in, I seem to slip in Purdue references here quite a bit. But USC, I believe their only cross country win since joining the Big Ten was at Purdue. And they didn't play well in that. Like they easily could have lost that game too. So you're talking about them having to go cross country. As you mentioned, probably a wideout Penn State. The one I think is going to be a little bit tricky just because I think he's done a really, really good job considering the circumstances at Northwestern. I'm not saying they're going to lose or won't be favored in that. I just think that's a sneaky type of game where Northwestern has played pretty well these past couple seasons under David Braun. But, you know, there's not really Marshall, Temple, Buffalo. None of those games scare you. Wisconsin has been a disaster since Luke Fickell took over. Northwestern, you should have more talent there. I'm just going down the schedule.
Yeah.
USC, Michigan, back-to-back weeks. Purdue at Washington, I think, is going to be, you know, a tough one. Then you finish with home games against Minnesota, Rutgers, and then at Maryland. There's no reason they shouldn't win at least 8 of those games. And I would probably say 9 or 10, but you know, maybe somebody jumps up and surprises us.
Well, the trip to Washington, it's that traveling coast to coast issue. So that will be tough. What makes Northwestern a tricky game is that is the first game they Northwestern has in their new stadium. And it's also a Friday night game. So that just changes things a little bit, makes it an oddball kind of game. Those are when surprises happen. So that's also where we're going to find out about Matt Campbell as a coach. Okay. He will have more talent. Will he win? All right, Dustin, lots more to talk about when we come back after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform, providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number 2 on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 2. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. Dustin, we kind of got off on a tangent in quarter number 1. What I actually wanted to talk to you about today is, because I hadn't chatted with you about this yet, the new rule out there by the NCAA where it's 5 years to play 5 seasons now for collegiate athletes. Now, we, of course, think about football all the time on this show, but it's a rule that is for all the sports. And I wanted to touch base with you. I know you're a big basketball guy, and it, just how this rule will affect basketball, for example, which will give us an idea of how this rule is going to affect the other sports.
Yeah, so, you know, what's interesting is I've been able to get some perspective from other coaches, and one of the perspectives was, you know, this helps the NCAA. This doesn't really help the coaches, because with the era of the transfer portal and guys being able to transfer, it means that you have one more year where you have to retain those players. So it adds a little bit more, a little bit more stress. It's going to be interesting to see over time how this impacts student athletes. I actually don't think it's going to impact a lot of them. And the reason I say that is because if you are talented enough, a talented enough basketball player, you are probably at some point before your 4 years is over, you're probably going to go to the NBA draft. Now there's obviously some things that can be said about, you know, with the current NIL and rev share, can you make more money by coming back to college? I still think that'll be a factor in some of these decisions. The other thing too is, Jim, to me, you're going to have guys that come in who are freshmen, who are maybe not up to par, but I think you're going to start to see maybe more of like, you know, maybe they're not ready to play, but if Penn State has a guy who comes in, let's say he's a four-star, you know, four-star recruit, got a lot of potential, but maybe just not quite ready for the college game. Well, previously, that kid could only play in exhibition games. Now, let's say, you know, he gets in a few games because Penn State's playing Stony Brook or something like that, Fairleigh Dickinson. Well, that guy, if Penn State's winning that game by 30 points, that guy can suddenly come in and play for, you know, he can play 10 or 15 minutes. He can get some live game experience. And then let's say, you know, somewhere down the road, he's developed to where he's adjusted. He learned the offense. There's team chemistry there. Maybe now that one player can come in and make a significant impact later in the year. But I think a majority of it is now you have guys who can come in, like the four-game redshirt rule in college football. You can have guys that aren't limited to not playing at all. They can come in and they can, you know, at least get their feet wet in some of these blowout games, or maybe if somebody fouls out or there's an injury, they can come in and make an impact. So I don't think it's going to be a ton of guys who are five-year starters. I think there are going to be a few of those guys, maybe at the mid-major, well, probably not at the mid-major level, because they'll eventually just transfer up if they're, you know, good enough to start for some of those programs. But it's going to be interesting. I hadn't thought about the keeping, you know, retaining a player for an extra year, but I honestly, at least on the basketball side, and this probably is going to be the same in terms of other sports, volleyball, football, softball, baseball, where I think if you are good enough to come in and start, you're probably at some point, you know, maybe you'll get an opportunity at the NBA level, or it gives you basically use that your freshman season as a redshirt year. You just get to play now instead of having to sit on the sidelines for a full 31 game season.
Now, in football, it's been, hey, I could play four games and still retain my redshirt. How about other sports? Like, what is the rule in basketball? How many games can you play? And how is it in other sports?
Well, I think in any other sport, I know in basketball, men's and women's, it's you can't play. You can play
can't
in the exhibition
play at all
game
to get the red shirt.
And to make it even a little bit weirder, if you're a freshman, you can play in those exhibition games. If you're redshirting as like a sophomore or a junior, you can't play, and even in the exhibition games, which makes zero sense to me. Those games don't count, so I don't know why that was even a rule in the first place. So, and I believe, I don't know if there's another sport where you can play. Volleyball, you can't play. I don't think there's any sport where you can play other than football that you can play and still retain all 4 years under the previous system.
Okay. When I heard you say exhibition, I didn't know if you misspoke, if you meant like out of conference or just in practice, you know, they're okay. You get X number of games and that's where you use them. But I hadn't thought about this until we chatted. Now, in basketball, there's an NBA factor to this, just like in football, there's an NFL factor. But what about the other sports? All of a sudden, if you're volleyball or softball, all of a sudden, are these no longer four-year athletes? They're five-year athletes, especially if you're getting compensated for it.
Yeah, there's been a rise in professional volleyball in the States. So I don't know what their rules are in terms of being able to be drafted, but pretty much everybody. So I'm going to use this as an example. Like if you play volleyball at Nebraska, it's probably going to be beneficial for you to be there all 5 years because your NIL, I mean, I'm not saying it's the same as the football, but you're probably in pretty good shape as a volleyball player. Now, if you're a volleyball player at, I don't know, Michigan State, and you're good enough, you probably are going to go pro because you probably would make more money than you're going to make at Michigan State. That's just an assumption. I don't know. But I do think that, you know, what you would coin maybe those Olympic sports or non-football and basketball sports, I do think that for the most part, you could probably throw baseball into that mix with basketball and football. Baseball guys would probably go to the MLB draft. But those other sports, I do think you will start to see more of those five-year athletes just because there aren't a lot of great secondary options after college for some of those sports. But again, Jim, to that point, I think rare are going to be the players who are coming in as freshmen and starting all 5 years. I think, again, this just allows some of those really good players to maybe play in a few matches as freshmen. And so it essentially is a redshirt rule similar to the football thing, in my opinion. I think there will still be, you know, you're going to have some transcendent players that, you know, Penn State's also got a really good volleyball program. There's probably going to be a freshman Penn State player who comes in and plays all 5 years. But the other three may come in and play 8 or 9 matches because they're playing against Fairfield. And then they really start to take off sophomore through senior year. And so is it really 5 years of eligibility or is it really just the football rule where it's 4 full years and then you get, you know, you play a handful of matches?
Well, the fact is you'll get one extra year. So even if you were, you know, the typical freshman doesn't get much of a chance to play, where under the old rules you'd sit out completely. Now you could play and it won't matter. And then you have 3 significant years. Now you'll get 4 significant years. So you do get the extra year. So, and it's, you know, I saw someone mention this. Again, I always like to compare to out to the real world, you know, the non-athletes going to college. And I saw this conversation somewhere about, gee, how are they going to talk about, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, then what's that fifth year? And we're going to have to change the terminology to be first, second, third, fourth, and fifth year. Okay, that's what makes sense. Because with these folks, yes, there's some people who go fast, some players who are never going to graduate. So doing it by year. But I love someone put in, you know, they weren't an athlete, but it took them 5 years to graduate. So they called that fifth year their victory lap.
Yes. Yeah. I've heard that before. Yep. You know what's funny, ahead. Jim, is you said first year, second year. So where I went to school, I don't know if they still do this or not. I think it was the president's quote unquote policy, but there was I don't think this is true, but whatever. She viewed the freshman term as like a negative
connotation
to it. So it was a first year. It wasn't a freshman. It was a first year. So on all the sports teams, they were listed as FY. And people were like, what the hell is an FY? I was like, well, it's a first year, not a freshman. I think I've gone back in recent years, and since they've changed leadership, I think they've changed that. But I hadn't thought about that until you mentioned first year, second year.
Well, I've been using it the last couple of years because you can't, you know, we're seeing redshirt sophomore, we're seeing super senior, then we're seeing super senior with a star next to it because it's the COVID year. And all of a sudden, you know, you start having guys who are seventh and eighth year people and, you know, first, second, and we've been getting also seventh and eighth year guys, but it's easier to keep track. But now with this 5 years, and it's why I think it creates a consistency to it. No matter the sport, no matter the player, here are your 5 years. And it seems a whole lot more fair. Now, you know, just talking football a bit, but where players, we've seen several Penn State freshmen who either as true freshmen came in and played regularly, got on the field, or a couple of them, a handful of them, because they were so valuable on special teams, But that's all they did. But they did it every game. Blew the red shirt that way, which always seemed to me unfair to the kid.
Yeah. I mean, that was always it's hard because I think as a student athlete, the coaches have to keep the kid's best interest in mind. And for the student athlete, like, they just want to play. So they're probably not thinking about blowing a redshirt year or whatever the case might be, right? I think even in the case of Talia Tungavailoa, like, he played 4 or 5 snaps when his brother got hurt and actually played that 5th game. Whereas if he doesn't play 4, you know, it's a difference of 4 snaps between him having an extra year and not having Mike Locksley on the hot seat and obviously not. So, you know, to me, the football side of things, like, it's been tough because you have to deal with so many injuries. The season's significantly longer now than it was even 5 years ago. So I think that this overall is going to be healthier. And again, I just don't think you're going to see, as you pointed out, like, everybody's going to get 5 years. So is there going to be a player who's a 5-year starter? Probably. There's probably going to be a few of those. But I think by and large, it's just going to be very similar now to where maybe a guy is able to play on those special teams, but he doesn't, you know, that's the only way he makes an impact. He plays on special teams all 12 games before he gets a shot to be that star cornerback, that star linebacker, whatever the case might be.
All right, Dustin, that is going to be it for quarter number 2 of our show. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this whole 5-year rule, because I think there are a lot of repercussions. We'll do that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. Dustin, we're talking about this, the 5-year rule, 5 years to play 5 seasons, which I think is great. It's very fair. One of the things that will have an effect, and we were talking a little bit about basketball, it's also a case in hockey, those international players mm-hmm. who may be playing some other, club or whatever, their clock starts when they are 19 years old. They can still come here when they're 21, but they already have lost 2 or 3 years of eligibility because their clock started at 19.
Yes, which should be the rule, in my humble opinion. You can't have, and there are some teams that have this, including, one of the teams I cover, but sometimes you have 21-year-old freshmen. Like, come on. And they've been playing. Now, I understand the idea that, like, their professional leagues are probably equivalent to the college. But I have always thought, I don't mind EuroLeague players or, whoever it might be coming over and joining a college team. I just think that the number of years, this was my thought a couple years ago. My thought was, okay, if you've played, the number of years you've played professionally should count against your eligibility. So if I played 3 years, I can come over, but I got 1 year left. If I haven't played at all, I don't have, or, I can play all 4 years. So, and I know a little bit of that is tricky, Jim, because some of these players can get onto professional quote unquote teams as like 16, 17, 18, just right. Because they lack. So I would say after a certain age, even to where, because is some of that EuroLeague stuff any different than what we see in like AAU basketball? It's probably pretty similar, right? So I think it's fair to say, after, and this rule is going to be 19, but if you were 18 or 19, okay, how many years did you play professionally? That's great. You can still come over here, but it's going to count against your eligibility. So I think that that's a very fair rule, because you don't need a 27-year-old playing college basketball or college football for that matter.
Well, and that's where the 19-year-old rule comes in. into effect, it evens the playing field. You know, we all turn 19 at exactly the same time, you know, at 19 years of age. So whatever you're doing otherwise. Now, it also, and it took me a while for this to register in my head. One of the things that was pointed out in the rule is anyone who's already in school or enrolled, they could go by the old rules or the new, whichever is more beneficial. And I thought, well, it's always got to be the new rules is beneficial. You get 5 years. Now, this is where that comes into play. If I'm a 21-year-old coming from Europe and I'm already in, I could play as a 21, 2, 3, 4, and 25-year-old.
Right.
Because I get the – or actually, I wonder if that's the case. If I'm like grandfathered into the old rules, does that mean I get 4 years of eligibility then? If I start at I'm in school and I'm 21 years old – I can't play it half and half. Like the old rules are, hey, I could be a 21-year-old freshman. But if I'm a 21-year-old freshman who plays, old rules mean I only get 4 years of playing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you – I mean, if they don't grandfather those players in, I think there's going to be shocking, Jim, lawsuits.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, I don't know how you would avoid a lawsuit if you were to punish those kids who have already enrolled under the previous rules. So I think you're going to have to let them move forward with it. And I think there are some teams now, and then I'll let you get to your point after I get off this soapbox. It's not really a soapbox, but I do know that, like, some teams are hesitant on some of these players that they're recruiting because they don't know what the rule's going to be. So. Right. You know, once it's enacted, like, so there's a program pursuing a 22, 23 year old. Okay. Well, do I get him for 1 year? Cause he may not be worth it if I think he's a project.
Right. And that's where I think the rule says if you are already enrolled, and maybe even if you've been recruited for this coming year, but, you're committed and you're older, you get to go by the old rules. Okay, I could be a 21-year-old freshman. My question is, the old rule says if I'm 21 years old without a, you know, using a red shirt, I've got 4 years to play.
Right.
The new rules are I have 5 years to play. But the new rules are, you know, where the numbers, the clock starts at age 19. So if I'm 21 years old, I can't like double dip. I want right. the old rules because I'm 21, but I want the new rules to play 5 years. I would think the only logical thing is if I'm 21 years old, already enrolled, I probably play by all the old rules. I can't pick and choose. Now, you mentioned the lawsuit, the lawsuits that will be coming. They will, and already where they're going to start, Dustin, apparently is – let's say I came in 4 years ago, played as a freshman, never had a red shirt, and I played 4 years. So under the old rules, I'm done. Those players are going to sue and say, oh, I'm here, did 4 years. Why can't I have the fifth year?
Yeah, I think that's undoubtedly going to happen. Just because, I mean, unless we get to some sort of collective bargaining when before that eligibility is up for those players. To me, it seems black and white, right? Like, pick which rule you want to play under and then move forward with those rules. Like, that's pretty cut and dry, but you're right. There's going to be people who press the issue and will, I don't know if they're going to win it, but they're going to take it to court for sure. So.
Well, I think where the argument against giving them that fifth year is that teams have been – they've been building their teams based on the fact that that quarterback is gone. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a freshman coming in, I know that quarterback is gone because he's used up his 4 years of eligibility. If I knew this incumbent was coming back, I wouldn't be coming to this school.
Right.
And as a coach of that team, you built your team based on, hey, those guys aren't going to be around anymore. Those are the rules. So I think for that reason, I get it. I maybe feel a little bit bad for those players, but not all that bad because, hey, those were, you knew the rules when you came in, and those were the rules.
This is, yeah, this, I don't feel bad for any student athlete. And I know that sounds crass and harsh, but like, to me, you, again, you know those rules when you sign up, you know what the deal is. And so I don't feel bad when players get rejected by the NCAA or, you know, filing motions or all this other thing to try to get extended eligibility. You know the rules, you know what the deal is. And it's not, you know, to me, Trinidad Shambliss should not be playing. But
right.
You get the right judge in Mississippi, and apparently you can. So, you know, it's just, it's unfortunate that it's gone to this length, because I've thought that now for, since the COVID year, really, they've been hindering the growth of like some of the high school student athletes and allowing that fresh flock to get in. But, you know, we'll see. I think, again, I still think that even though he's not going to play this year, I still think the Brendan Sorsby situation kind of reforms college athletics and makes it so that you have some rules that, whether it's the NCAA or some other new governing body comes in, can enforce those rules, or maybe if it's just the leagues and can enforce those rules, so that, that way everybody's playing on a level playing field, everybody knows the rules, and there are no lawsuits regarding some of this stuff.
Well, that's it. I think there will be the obvious places where there are lawsuits, but I think you brought up a good point with the Sorsby situation. I said it many times when that was going on, do not underestimate the court of public opinion, okay? Mm-hmm. Sorsby, definitely Texas Tech, they had no idea there would be the blowback that there was. And in effect, it wasn't a court ruling, it was the court of public opinion that caused him not to play at Texas Tech. Especially the school itself said, you know, this just isn't going to fly. We're going to have to deal with this every day. No, let's just cut our losses. So, and that was because of the court of public opinion. Anyway, my point being that I think the court of public opinion has swung to the pendulum to the NCAA has never been a sympathetic figure. However, you know, it's gone so far that, yeah, in these situations, they have become the sympathetic figure. When you have players coming back for their eighth year, all of a sudden, this rule, it's a bout of common sense, which is kind of crazy because, as they always say, it's neither common nor – there's not much common nor sense going on.
That, yeah, exactly. It's hard for the NCAA to get the public opinions, a majority of the public opinion on their side. So – like, this was so glaringly obvious, and you just wonder how many more people are going to take the side of the, when you have situations where it's people applying for 7-8 years of eligibility. Like, it's just reached ridiculous levels now where everybody blames the NCAA, but a lot of times the NCAA is trying to do the right thing, and not on the money front or anything, but like, they're trying to limit these players from getting all of this extended eligibility and playing through all these rules. But they're just not able to enforce it because the courts keep overturning them. So they haven't been quite the bad guy that I think people have painted them out to be, at least in recent years.
And you have this situation now where the players are making so much money, it's hard to paint them as a sympathetic figure. You know, hey, you already made, you know, millions of dollars. And we see the situation. We're familiar with it here at Penn State, where a player named Chaz Coleman went to Tennessee through the portal, took the most money. It's reportedly he did an over $2 million deal, and then didn't show up for spring practice. And there's some talk of, you know, prior injuries, concussion kind of things, personal problems, this or that. Things that in another year I think would have made him a sympathetic figure. However, when there's, you went there because you went for the dollars, you went for the $2 million, boy, it's hard to be sympathetic to them. All right, Dustin, that's going to be it for quarter number three. When we come back, I want to ask you more about the repercussions of this ruling as far as building a team, building a program. Is it going to change things? We'll talk about that when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We've been talking about this 5 years to play, five seasons rule that went into college football. I think you and I agree. I think the majority of fans agree. Even, you know, inside football buildings, they agree. It makes things simpler, easier for the coaches. They don't have to try to manipulate the redshirt games, all of those things. Very 5 years, five seasons, clock starts either at high school graduation or when you turn 19. Fantastic rule. However, whenever you make such a kind of rule change, there's always unintended consequences. And here's one of the unintended consequences, which I don't think is a bad thing, but I think it permeates a lot of other things and decisions. The NFL star type players, they're gone in 3 years now anyway. They don't even use their fourth year, let alone a fifth, Dustin. Okay. But the rule, the player who's helped by this rule could be the good but not great player. The guy who says, hey, I'm never going to make it to the NFL, but I get a fifth year being paid to do what I love doing, playing football, hang out at the college campus. That's a great deal. Now the question becomes, will this affect how you build a team, Dustin?
I don't really think so. I just think it, I mean, part of it is, you're going to have to recruit your own players for an additional year. If you want to look at it that way, you're going to recruit each class. Let me rephrase it. Recruit each class for an additional year. But in terms of like building a team, I don't necessarily think so, because it's the same philosophy. It's just a change in years. The one thing that I think will be interesting, and I think a lot of players are going to get a taste of reality, and this is probably already happening, Jim, but I think it may be exacerbated with a fifth year. But let's say you have a running back who's been really, you know, solid for you. Let's not say really good. But he's been solid. He's produced at a high level. He's going to come. He's, like you said, he's maybe not NFL material, but he's a really good college running back. Well, I'm Penn State. Well, I got this five-star kid who was pretty good as a freshman, and now he's showing that explosiveness. And I want him to be the featured back in my offense next year. And I don't want this fifth-year guy back. Does Matt Campbell have the conversation with the fifth-year guy and say, you're going to have to take a, you know, we were depleted in the running back room. We feel much better about where we were. Thank you for your service. But A, your option is to stay here, take a pay cut, and take fewer snaps. Or B, we're happy to let you transfer and help you out in that way and see if you can go somewhere else and maybe get more money, get more snaps, whatever the case might be. I think that that is already happening with some players now. I think that you'd see more of that with fifth-year guys, because the jump, everybody talks about players jump. The biggest jump is from that freshman to sophomore year. So if you have some really talented guys coming in and you're just trying to hold down the fort for a year, that guy might be very, that one running back might be very valuable for that 2027 season, but are you in better shape 2028 with the, two or three guys you brought in and you don't have a use for him as much? He's going to cost you money. You know, there's a lot of different factors here. So I just think you would see more of the coaches cut ties with some of those players. If they felt like they were in a better spot without them. I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit hard to explain, but I don't think the overall team building aspect of it is going to really be that much different, but that's, I don't know. Maybe you've got a counter argument to me.
Well, I maybe I'm creating an issue where there isn't one, but I'm looking at, and you and I have talked about this quite a bit in the basketball world, where you have those, Kentucky's and Kansas and North Carolina's and Duke's who have those first year players who are one and done's and going to move on to the NBA after a year. They lose to a MAC team in the tournament who's playing with a bunch of seniors.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there's going to be more of that where, and because of my familiarity now with Matt Campbell coming here, I'm thinking like Iowa State. Okay. Yeah. They don't typically have five-star guys there. They don't typically have four-star guys. They get three-star guys, coach them up, and all of a sudden, and again, to your point, there may not be a lot of them who were playing as freshmen anyway, so they are there for 5 years. But if there are players that are good enough to get on the field as a freshman, they would be done in 4 years. But, for example, Ben Brommer, a very good tight end, he's transferring from Iowa State. He's a senior. He didn't redshirt. He would normally, this is his last year. Guess what? He could have another year. So are there, at Iowa State, Ohio State, a good number of their players are done after 3 years because they're going to the NFL. Right. Well, other schools may keep a player for a fourth year. Well, now they might be able to keep them for a fifth year. I guess I'm wondering, could there be actually even more parity because of this rule?
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I guess it does fall under the team building aspect because, as we've just seen, I hate to keep mentioning him, but it's the most recent example, Kurt Cignetti got a bunch of experienced guys. They had fourth year, fifth year, sixth year, I think maybe even to an extent a seventh year guy that were on their roster. And so having that, you're talking about, and I don't, 25-year-olds against 21-year-olds, right? There's a maturity, there's a strength, there's a experience difference there. I think that you could potentially see that. The only issue I see, I think you would see it on a different level. So when we talk about it in college basketball terms, we usually think about High Point upsetting Wisconsin or Lehigh taking down Duke. I think in college football, it would be something more like, and Indiana would be the example, but let's use not a national champion. It would be Illinois beating Alabama, right? It would be lesser known power conference teams. You might get the occasional Boise State, TCU's in a power conference. I'm trying to think now. Tulane, might get the occasional one of those who maybe makes a run or something. But I think more than anything, it would be, a Colorado or now Texas Tech. You could throw a number of examples out there where I think just lower tier major programs would have more of a chance to upset the typical Ohio State, Alabama, teams like that.
And that's why I used Iowa State as the example. Yeah. I think they're a perfect example. And just to emphasize the point is, Dustin, we're talking about players who won't be drafted to the NFL. How about players who are being drafted, but they've got a lower round grade? Okay. If you're a sixth or seventh round player, you're going to make average around $900,000.
Yeah.
If you make the team and you've got a less than 50% chance of making the team. Okay.
Right.
So how much are you making as a starter in a Power Four conference? I know it matters a little bit by position, but almost any position, especially as a veteran, I could be making $500,000-$700,000. And Dustin, that's guaranteed. You have the option, my friend. Guaranteed $700,000 or 50-50 chance at $900,000. Which are you taking?
Yeah, I'm taking the $700,000 and coming back to school. Now, the
plus thing you could also maybe improve your draft status by coming back for the year.
The one thing I would say, the one reason you hesitate on some of this, though, is, and it probably depends on where you're projected. I would take the guaranteed money. Now, this is where I think financial advice is going to be key for a lot of these, because it's not always about the you know, having the better money. But the other thing is, and it depends on where you're drafted, but let's say you were drafted in a round where the money is going to be similar. So you have a chance to improve your draft stock by coming back, or you could take the money and start your NFL career, and maybe it's 50-50, whatever. You also have the chance to hurt your draft stock. You could get injured. You could have a terrible seat. Like, imagine if Drew Aller was probably considered a higher draft pick after his 2024 season than 2000. Yes. So you could argue he hurt. I mean, I think did he have to come back for 2025? Was he of age to enter the draft?
He could have gone the prior year. He could have left after 24.
So that would be an example of a guy who maybe if he's – was he a third-round pick? I'm sorry.
So, yeah, it actually would have been an interesting experiment. Would he have gone higher? You know, everyone looks at that last season. It was a disappointing season for the team. I'm not sure he would have gone much different, but your point is still valid. Might I hurt my draft status by coming back?
Right, right. So that's an evaluation that you have to have too. Now, I think, again, in your case, where you're talking about sixth or seventh round, the smart thing to do would be to come back. You're probably not going to hurt your status that much, and you get the guaranteed money. But if you're in that, you know, third or fourth round area, and the money's going to be maybe – so I'm not going to pretend to know what the rounds are. But
fortunately for you, Dustin, fortunately for you, you're talking
to
me. You
got the money. Yeah.
I actually do my homework. I knew what we were going to talk about. So I looked it up. Fourth round picks make just over $1 million on average their first year.
Okay.
And so they make the team average between 60 and 70% of them make it. Okay. So it's, let's call it 65% chance of making the NFL for $1 million versus coming back for a guaranteed, you know, let's use that same $700,000-$800,000. What are you going to do, Dustin?
Yeah, I fortunately I've never been a world class athlete and been faced with this problem. I see in that situation, I would think, and this is where I would take advice from people, like, and it probably depends on what position you are and a lot of things, but yep. I think I would take the NFL chance.
No,
you would come back.
I'd come back. In the way, I'm getting guaranteed money. I might go to the NFL, not make the team, and that's it. End of my career. This way, I'm guaranteed $700,000, Dustin, and I also have a chance to improve my draft status. That's what I would do. And because I'm in charge, that's the final word. Thank you, Dustin. Make sure you all join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.